Hello, 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 everybody. It is another marvelous Monday with Common Sense Uncensored, and we're here today to get to the truth and the bottom of a whole bunch of things. And as most of you know, dear to my heart is education, having spent 20 years in the belly of the beast, as I like to call it. So we have a really, in my opinion, a real treat today. We have Jim Bartlett, and he is running for North Dakota Superintendent of Public Instruction. And I am going to say, hey, Jim, how's it going?
It's going very good. Thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say, because there's a lot of governmental departments that are in varied degrees of turmoil. But education is certainly one of them. So could you tell me, first of all, what your background is and why you think it qualifies you, and why you think you want to be the superintendent of North Dakota's public instruction?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I grew up in New Hampshire, went to public schools, went to a tech school for automotive technology. At age 19, I was on the New Hampshire Education Commission accrediting colleges at the time. I ended up a teacher at the same vocational technical college in New Hampshire. I, after that, went to General Motors Institute at Purdue University to become a mechanical engineer, worked at Cadillac Motor Car in Detroit, later went to, I ended up at NDSU in graduate school for mechanical engineering, and then the PhD in engineering, and then taught engineering at NDSU for 17 years. And during the time there, I met my wife, Lynn, and then we had children and started to think, wow, what are we going to do about school? And when I was going to school at Purdue, I was living with pastors that were traveling to North Dakota to help the Christian schools and homeschoolers fight the Department of Public Instruction regarding the compulsory school laws at the time, the 1980s. And so I started getting a hint right away that, hey, there is an issue in education that needs to be addressed. And the root of it is some philosophy like humanism that I really needed to understand. And so over the years, I spent a lot of time studying those topics. I've done many different things, but a couple of highlights would be things like, again, an international award for teaching the business of electronics manufacturing. I've been studying the philosophies of what's going on in the school since 1984. And so I have a lot of interesting background that way. So as later, I also became the executive director for the North Dakota Homeschool Association and was in the network with all the leaders nationwide on education topics, still am. And so I understand both inside the box, being inside the public school box and public college box for 40 years, and I can see the outside of the box really clearly. And so the issues are very interesting. It is a spiritual battle, but the issues can be very clearly identified with a few introductions to philosophy. You know, what is postmodernism? What is secular humanism? And what is Marxism would be the main ones that we have to deal with.
Okay, so I'm going to take you to your website for a second, which happens to be bartlettspi.org. That's his website, so you can find out more about him in that. And the one thing that I see is you would like to have a Christian cultural context. And you say that the Bible and Ten Commandments were actually taught to school children for more than 100 years in our public schools. There's going to be people that are going to say that the Ten Commandments have no place in schools. What's your answer going to be to them?
Say, well, that's interesting. first of all, let's go back to public schools when they were created. Noah Webster, the founding father of American scholarship and education, he wrote the blueback speller that was used in New England, and that was used for over 100 years to teach kids reading, writing, arithmetic, and, you know, getting them started. And that included the Ten Commandments and some theology of the time. In fact, 2/3 of American colonies were of the same mind, and so they were not in the minority at all at that time. And then his dictionary, written in 1828, is really interesting because we have a different dictionary today compared to then. The North Dakota Constitution was written in 1889, ratified. And at that time, which dictionary were they using? The same one we have today? No. They were probably using something closer to, if not exactly, Webster's 1828 dictionary. And so if you realize that North Dakota, you know, was founded a while ago, in that time, people were thinking like Christians because the culture was Christians. And so when they said acknowledging Almighty God in the preamble of the North Dakota Constitution, they meant the Christian God. They weren't imagining some other thing. And then when they wrote about that the children should be learning morality, then they weren't thinking about some other morality like the humanists would say is we call moral relativism. In those days, when they spoke of morality or morals in the North Dakota Constitution, they're speaking of the Christian morals. And so the moral law, what was the moral law? It was the Ten Commandments. So it's no big problem with that because the Ten Commandments are basically summarized with love God, love your neighbor. And if that's too long of a summary, just do unto others as you would have them do unto you would be the same summary of the Ten Commandments.
Well, and I agree because I've been having some, I won't say contentious, but there I've been debating some people who said that the Ten Commandments shouldn't be in the classroom. And I said, okay, which one of them do you have a disagreement with? Because it doesn't specify which God. It just says, put your God before others. And it's no murder, no adultery, no stealing, no lying, no coveting. And so when I read through them for them, I said, you wouldn't want your kid to adhere to any of to which one of these? Just pick one. And they just kind of say, well, you're pushing your religion. I said, no. I think those are 10 really good rules for anybody to live by. And I just don't see a problem with it. But you understand that that's the way it's going to be construed, correct?
Yes, and I want to invite everybody to study the idea of neutrality. And so, are you saying, public school person that doesn't want the Ten Commandments in school, are you saying that there is right now no religion in the public schools? Is that what you're saying? I'd have to wait for the answer. And then I'd refer them to a book and then the Supreme Court documents that are in the book called Clergy in the Classroom by David Noble, where he kind of brings together all the Supreme Court documents that show that the religion of secular humanism is a religion, definitely, with 10 aspects like theology, philosophy, ethics, biology, psychology, sociology, law, politics, economics, and history. And those aspects of secular humanism are the only religion allowed in the public schools, so says the Supreme Court. And I think today we actually have to go a little bit further because that was 20 years ago. But we would add a little bit more Marxism to cover the statism of socialism and add some postmodernism for the anti-realism and the social construction and historical revisionism ideas. So, long story short, neutrality is where people think that schools can be neutral in what they're teaching. So, if you're not going to teach Christianity, you're just going to be neutral. No way. It's impossible. It's and in fact, it's the greatest violation of the First Amendment there is in history, because everybody is taught that they cannot speak Christianly in the public schools. You can't talk about the Ten Commandments. Christians, in fact, I've got one example where a Christian teacher in a Christian school in North Dakota had his license taken away for teaching the Ten Commandments.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, wait a minute, what kind of crazy are we in? I know what crazy we're in. It's called postmodernism. And so, in that regard, people believe that there is no truth. Truth cannot be found, and that there's no reality, and no reality can be found. So, therefore, you get the things like furries and math by feelings and anything goes. So, the really important point is to be able to dissect those things. So, rather than just shooting at the shiny objects, the furries, or the issues in the schools, you got to look at the foundations that are driving the issues in the schools. And that's where the philosophies come in. And there's some good quick references to understand that. It doesn't have to be too complicated.
Well, the one thing I noticed when I was teaching was that in many ways the inmates had taken over the asylum. And by that I mean, if you asked kids to do something, I had no problems in my classroom, but there were teachers that wouldn't ask kids to do assignments and stuff because they were so hard. And I said, well, how are you going to stretch those kids' minds? And I know that there's quite a debate at the K through 12 level regarding homework. They're saying that they don't want to assign homework because they think it's too stressful. And I'm just sitting back going, boy, it seems to me that there were generations of kids that had homework that somehow managed to cope.
The philosophies drive every aspect of what's going on in schools. So the teachers have gone to the teachers' colleges, and that's where John Dewey had the great idea of changing the culture in America to be anti-Christian by specifically teaching the teachers first, so then they would bring the bad ideas through the school. So then when you get down to teaching and homework and lower standards, you're really basing things on feeling. So that's a subtle aspect of critical race theory, where you're putting your emphasis on feeling. So I think some of the modern, the new evolution of critical race theory is almost like critical emotion theory. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're just replacing race with emotion and how people feel. And that's even harder to detect than race, because, you know, if a person's black or white, that's easy to tell. But if you are basing your critical race ideas on emotion, then you don't want people to do too much homework. They will feel bad, because the foundational belief is that they have a belief that there is no God and that there's no spirit in man. And so therefore the culture, the schools have to be molding the person. And then that molding has to be based on the ideas that there's no reality, there's no truth. And then it's based on your feelings are going to form you, those kind of crazy ideas. So it's not truth. And so North Dakota Constitution requires that we teach truth. Those things are lies. They need to go.
I noticed, too, that when I'm looking at your website, that you have a choice in where the child goes to school. And Minnesota is watching their enrollment numbers just absolutely plummet. Can't imagine why. And I also happen to know that this is a terrible thing that's happening in North Dakota as well. And that means either we're having less babies, which is true, but I also think we have more kids that are being homeschooled. Therefore, is there an awakening or what is occurring, you think, that is causing, first of all, the enrollment drop, and second of all, the teachers' unions and stuff to be so rabid about there not being allowed any choice for parents, or at least not, well, you still have to pay for the public school, and then if you want to pony up.
Yeah, in the culture broadly, yeah, we are seeing some kind of revival, maybe, or something that is broadly an awareness that people have. Something is really wrong. They may not be able to explain it from a philosophy point of view, but they don't want their kids in it. I mean, we felt that same way with our kids, you know, 25 years ago, and we didn't participate in the public school system for that reason. So today, it's even more obvious that this is hurtful to children. I understand the need for the communities and the desire for communities to rally around the school and have good things happening. And those can still happen. There's no problem. But there's just the bad ideas have to get out of there. And sometimes it takes some work to get them out.
Well, it's been occurring for a long time.
Yeah, since 1933 or before. And so from 1933, that's where John Dewey, you go on the Stanford website, I think he had some interesting quote. He had an idea of religion as social intelligence. A common faith is one of the notes here. And so basically, he wanted to not swap out the old religion quickly. He just wanted to replace it without identifying what they were doing. And so today, that's what's blue got here. Everybody thinks public schools are not religious, and yet they've learned humanism very thoroughly since 1933.
Well, I'm going to take my very first commercial break here, and I want everybody to know that the Spirit of America Bike and Car Show is on Saturday, April 13th, and Sunday, April 14th at the Alaris Center. It's the 2024 Red River Valley Motorcyclists of Spirit of America Bike and Car Show, and you're going to be able to see, and these are my favorites, man, a wide array of vintage automobiles and motorcycles. Tickets are only $10, and kids under 12 and under, are going to be free with a paying adult, and veterans, you're also going to be able to get in free. There's going to be live music, an award ceremony, a beer garden, over $100,000 in multi-raffle tickets, and prizes are highlighted by a 2024 Harley-Davidson Road Glide Special, a Polaris North Star Edition Ranger with a trailer, and a 2024 golf cart, so you can win big. And the net proceeds benefit Law Enforcement Memorial Park, Veterans Honor Flight of North Dakota, Minnesota, Journey Home Animal Rescue, Red River Valley Community Action, and many other local charities. For more information and to purchase tickets, you can visit the Alaris Center box office or go online to rrvmnd.org. And if you like vintage cars and motorcycles and tricked out things like I do, you're going to want to be there. Again, I just want to make sure everybody knows Saturday, April 13th, Sunday, April 14th at the Alaris Center. Okay. Well, the thing that I'm also thinking of is that we've set standards and expectations for our students so low. I went to this We Are Teachers website, and they're the ones that said homework has not been proven to do any good. And this is something else that they've got on their website. Think for a minute the skills a kid needs to navigate multiple classes. They have to be able to organize them right materials and bring the supplies to the classroom. They have to be able to switch focus according to the bell rather than natural transitions. They have to have the physical dexterity to pack up their stuff, move it across a hall, and unpack it. And they have to code switch, their words, not mine, between preferences, expectations, and pet peeves of multiple teachers several times a day. That's a lot to ask of an 8-year-old. What do you think about that statement? I know what I think, but I want to know what you think.
Yeah, my first thought is the same thing as I read when I was reading through the Be Ready's current ideas. And that is, wow, these teachers have too much time on their hand. If they've got to kind of micromanage and understand what every little thing is going on like that, it's like they really should be putting their focus on more important things like the reading, the writing, the arithmetic, and really teaching. And they should raise the standards. You know, when we were teaching kids, we learned really from the homeschool crowds that the way to do it is to teach and read above their level. Yes. So we, you know, read the King James Bible. It's got the 12th grade reading compared to a dumber down version or anything. So that we were reading to the kids at adult levels instead of dumbing down the adults down to the kids level. And so, I think the expectations have gone down, and correspondingly the tests and the results have gone down. And that, again, it's a philosophy, a way they think.
Well, I agree with you. And the reason I say that is because I had my students for 2 years, community college. I was teaching them business. They had the opportunity to go on and finish their 4-year degree. But my job, in my opinion, was to get them ready to be business entrepreneurs in 2 years, because I taught business. And one of the things we did during the marketing management class was we spent an entire semester writing an A to Z marketing plan for an area nonprofit or a small business that we knew was just having troubles getting started up and stuff. And that is currently today master's level work. And these kids rose to the occasion, put together, presented that plan to the businesses and everything else, and they did it in a semester format. We went from A to Z. The company would give us information. They understood that this was proprietary information, couldn't be shared outside the class. We understood. We went through it section by section, and we did something different every year. And a lot of times been businesses I didn't even know. And I'd say to the kids, all right, kids, here we go. I know nothing about this business. So we're all going to learn together. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Hang on. Here we go. And the kids excelled because I didn't tell them they couldn't. It amazes me.
You know, today we're treating kids like Ford carts. I'm quoting in a sense, in 1926, Jake Gresham Machen, he was the president of Princeton University, and speaking before a joint House of Congress on why we should not have a Department of Education. And the reason that why was partly that it didn't work in the Greek days, but also that the worst thing that could happen would be to have one curriculum that fits all students and to treat everyone like a mechanical machine rather than the individual people that they really are. And he even used the term idiosyncrasies. We wouldn't want to lose the idiosyncrasies of the individual. And today, you know, we criticize the people that are different, right?
Yes.
And so that was a bad thought, has been for a long time.
What do you think about standardized tests? The reason I'm asking this is because there's such an anathema to standardized tests, but then what we're ending up with is we're not requiring PSATs, SATs anymore to get into college. We are having, however they're assessing proficiency, I don't know if they're just sticking their finger in the air, checking to see which way the wind blows or whatever, but the proficiency scores are abysmal. And I'm just trying to figure out, is there any way out of this?
Absolutely. Very easy, too. First, let me speak to the people that like the tests. And that would be to say, okay, that they're not doing that good on the tests, right? Some schools are even getting zero and close to zero.
Yes, they are.
As tests, that's like, how is that even possible? So before I criticize the test, let me just say that if you like that test, then let's look at how it's scored. And if you look at the details of the test scoring, somehow it requires differential calculus to figure it out. So that reminds me of like a computerized voting system where no one really knows what happened. And you can't go back very easily to count the votes. And so we don't have a really clarity on what those tests are showing. In a sense, like you might imagine, you know, most people think of the test as like a 0 to 100 math test. You know, you got 50 right, you get 50 points or something. But that's not it at all. And so that's an issue with the test. Secondly, the whole curriculum, North Dakota standards, have been based on the Common Core standards. Ugh. And so it's like, okay, you really want to test for that? I mean, why are we doing that? And if you've seen the video lately, it was interesting. YouTube video about kids and students, I think let's see, it was students and teachers from Finland laughing at the Americans taking the tests that are standardized tests with short answers, because they know that short answer tests dumbs people down.
Yep, multiple choice.
Doesn't even learn, teach them very much. And so they know that. And so they look at us and say, how dumb can you get? And then if you look closer to the test, like John Taylor Gatto, he was New York Teacher of the Year and New York State Teacher of the Year, wrote a really good book called Weapons of Mass Instruction. I give that book away, and it's also free on archive.com. And if you study that, you'll see that those tests are psychologically intended to create a pliable workforce, not create leaders. And so it's not just what you think. It's really another one of those worldviews that are coming through very deliberately. And in the back of the book, he has a little Bartleby project. And I tell kids this too. It's like basically the way to fix the test is for every student to write on the top of their test, I prefer not to take this test, and turn it in. Because it is not doing any good to the student. They'll come out dumber after they take the test. And it's not doing what the parents want. It's not serving the taxpayers. It's an incredible waste of time. Think about all the focus there is on teaching to the test.
Yes.
Right? And it's like, what a waste of time there. So you could give me a half an hour. I could give you a test for, you know, probably a couple of grades. And it would be fine. I mean, you could have a real test to know where kids are at. And you don't have to report it to the Federal Department of Education. You don't have to merge it with every other test score in the state or the country. You can work locally, have parents work to do that. Yeah, there's a lot to say about testing. It's mostly a waste of time.
Well, this is a Seeking Consensus in Education by Clay Green. And it says, the Department of Education's 1983 report, A Nation at Risk, warned of the rising tide of mediocrity that threatens our very future as a nation and a people, adding that if an unfriendly foreign power had attempted to impose on America the mediocre educational performance that exists today, we might well have viewed it as an act of war.
Yeah, you know, part of the idea is when you treat all kids like a Ford car going through the process at the same grade, same age, you lose the point that some kids are going to be really excellent at math and going to need to excel. And so I'm just hearing it from one parent recently where the daughter was an amazing math student. And so they pulled her out of school so she could excel in math. Mm-hmm. And she could just zoom along, and she was doing, you know, master's level calculus, you know, before she was, 17.
It's not uncommon. When I was in school, my mother, bless her heart, taught me to read very, very young. At five, I was reading Treasure Island, and comprehending it because she'd worked at Mew. So when I got to school, you can imagine how thrilled I was with Dick and Jane.
Yeah.
And I was forced to sit through Dick and Jane, and I was going off my nut. So then suddenly I was prescribed as a troublesome child. Thank God they didn't put you on drugs for that back then, because that'd have been an absolute mess. But the problem was they had to force me to fit into the mold, and I was a trouble kid when I didn't fit there, rather than saying, kid, here's your book, go sit in the corner, read your buns off, and tell me about the story later, because that wasn't possible.
You know what happens when you have the system so overbearing, it becomes a bully itself, but it also takes the fun out of the learning and the teaching. And so then you've got a loss of teachers because they're into the system that really makes it no fun. You got to use this emotional social learning curriculum, and it basically tells the teacher what to say at every paragraph. And it's like, this is not teaching. This is not fun. And for the students, they're doing the same thing. It's like, oh boy, how long do I have to sit through this? And instead of excelling and being excited about what's learning, what they can learn, and then the teachers being free to direct them in, you know, the different directions that help each child.
Well, even in our rural schools, and I run into a lot of pushback because when I talk, they go, oh, well, those are the big schools. Those aren't the small rural schools. But I was reading the local school board minutes and stuff for my little area where I'm at around Hillsboro and stuff. And there's a huge absenteeism problem where the kids are just not bothering to go to school because, as you said, they don't think it's worth their time. They're not being forced to go to school, and they're graduating anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So there's incentives, of course, for the schools to graduate the kids and give them good grades. I saw that in engineering school, too. At some point, if your students were getting too low a score, then you curve everything up so the average person gets a B. You know, those kind of things are happening, somewhat legitimate, somewhat not. But the idea is that the philosophies are having these practical consequences, right? So it's like you get these kids that don't want to go to school. It's, why is that? Well, it's because they're being taught crazy things and things that aren't true, and they know it. For instance, there's a test called the Pierce test. It's all about politics, education, economics, religion, and social issues. And it was given to kids in their church youth group, so Christian kids and youth groups that go to public schools. It's been given every year across the U.S. from 1983 till today. And in 1983, the kids were coming home, the Christian kids in public schools, and they were getting about a score of about 40, which is the moderate Christian range. And then since 1988 or so, all the way down through the early 2000s, they were coming home secular humanist. Wow. And so now today, they're coming home socialist, which is below zero. So the score below zero on that test. So you can summarize that by saying North Dakota right now is teaching 115,000 children how to be socialists right now. So that's going to have a huge impact on our future. And it's been going on for a while. So that's why we have the future we have now. But that needs to stop. I mean, it can stop right away because this is being driven aloud from the top, from the current DPI superintendent, and the systems that are in place that are so connected to the national systems that that have all these bad philosophies embedded. And so somebody's got to get in there and say, bad philosophy, stop it right now. All three of the major ones would be the first targets.
Awesome. I'm going to my next commercial with Executive Properties. And when we come back, I want to continue with that because that interests me a lot. Paul, take it away.
Are you still putting off that project around the house that's been bugging you forever? Do you think you can wait until spring and call a contractor and have the work done ASAP? Well, good luck with that. Executive Properties has openings right now to get that project done. In fact, you can check out their Google reviews. Diane says Executive Properties did a roof project and remodeled a bathroom in our house. We were happy with their quality of work, and the projects were completed in a timely manner. We will use Executive Properties for our next home project. Get that project done sooner than later. Call Executive Properties, 701-330-1273.
And the weather's turning nice, so you're going to want to make sure that you get your, contact the boys and get your appointment set up so you can get them to come out and do your job for you. Okay, you mentioned something that I think is very crucial to a lot of school districts, and that is control. The state's got a voice. The feds have got a voice. It comes down to a lot of times money. I remember the fact that Biden actually came out and was telling everybody that he was going to pull lunch funding and other funding and stuff if they didn't let boys use girls' locker rooms and everything else when he first came on and things. And what are you going to do when someone says, I'm going to take my money back and go home? Because there's a lot of school districts out there that are going to say, we can't allow that to happen. We have to knuckle under.
Yes, I take the bottom-up approach. First of all, parents need to be in control of the education of their children. They're given that right by God. The state is not God. The state does not own the children. The state can help by doing good things that support the parents. But here's the idea. So if you get every school individually and gather the parents of the school in a room with a big whiteboard in the front, and right on top of the board, complete parental control. And then on the left side of the board, strategic vision, mission, goals, and then budget will be on there. So the budget has to be set and understood by the parents, not the administrators. In fact, in that meeting, I would say no teachers allowed, no superintendents allowed, no administrators allowed, just parents get together and say, okay, what do you actually want done at your school, period? Because and then start using what's lean accounting, where you can put items to the values that you have. So if you want social emotional learning, okay, let's put that on the budget line and see how much we want to spend on that. If you want socialism, let's put a line on that and see how much do you want to spend on that, and go through it so that you can identify it as the budget line. So the control of the system is wicked. I mean, it is so bad. And so we can see it from the training of the superintendents to the school boards. There's the systematic control. It literally is a bullying system all the way around. And then you look at it and you hear stories about how the parents are afraid to speak up at the school board meetings because their kids will get bullied if they hear about the parents speaking up. Or the school board members are getting bullied by other school board members because they're saying something different. Or the teachers are losing their licenses because they want to speak up. And so it's an intimidating system, and it is wicked. I mean, that is the worst way to encourage learning I could imagine, is to have everybody working in fear.
When I look at your website again, you've got quite a few of suggestions and stuff here, and some of them interest me, and that is more parent learning alongside of their children. And I think that's an excellent idea, but I also know that there's going to be a large component of people that are going to say, there's a lot of parents that don't want to do that, don't have the time to do that, or just don't care.
Yeah, and I half answered that question already. Mm-hmm. And that is the reason why parents don't care, don't want to be involved, is because they don't feel heard. They don't feel like they're involved. They are being bullied out of the system. And so that's the key to getting parents back involved, is to say, yeah, you really have a voice. You know, God's given you the responsibility for your children, not to hand them over to a school system. And so they can take that responsibility back, and you'll see it. Same thing, you know, think about voting, right? Mm-hmm. People don't want to go vote if their candidate's losing or if there's no good news about their candidate or something. And it's like when things are good things are happening for their candidate or their cause, they get involved. Same thing. You know, right now the parents are being bullied out of the system by the system. And so the idea that things could not change or have more parental involvement is only a result of the current system, not a system where parents would be given actual authority to do things.
Another one, number three, is better behavior with effective discipline. And not bragging, but I had 20 years without any classroom problems. But there were actually in services and stuff where teachers were taught how to handle disruptive students in their this isn't college, for Lord's sake. I mean, they're not special education students or whatever. And I was left sitting there going, I don't understand how you have that problem. Because pretty much the very first day of school, I said, won't tolerate in my classroom, period. just won't. These are the rules. This is how we behave towards each other. I respect you. You respect me. You all respect each other. And the day that goes south is the day we're going to have a meeting that you will not wish to attend. And the kids kind of went, whoa. And I went, not a threat. Promise.
You bet.
And, yep. But there were people that had students coming after them with scissors and other things that were going on in the classroom. And this is at a college, so I can only begin to imagine what it might even be like at a regular K through 12. Because when you're telling kids they have full access to their emotions, you're probably going to see a few you don't like. What do you think you're going to be able to do? What type of discipline are you talking about?
Well, exactly what you are saying, too. You just have a standard, and then when the student crosses over the line, consequences occur. You know, you don't have to base it on how people feel. Think about the bullying situation, you know, where they try to help with bullying, the teachers do. There's a policy for bullying with the DPI, but you compare that with some of the Christian school policies for bullying, and you can see what's missing. The idea that there is a God and that he judges evil, and what you did is evil, is sin, it needs to be confessed, and it needs to be stopped immediately. And so that the parents need to be, and students need to know what's right and what's wrong. You know, part of morality that's supposed to be taught in the public schools is exactly that. What is good, what is evil? And right now that cannot be taught in the public schools because that's Christian. And so if you taught the fact that you should not hurt someone else, you know, based on the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill, but also means don't hurt people. That would mean don't hurt them bullying, you know, in the locker room or wherever it is. And so that has to be taught and disciplined to a standard. Right now, there's no standard. That moral relativism is literally the ethics category of secular humanism. So if you have no morals, how do you discipline for that? There's nothing that's wrong. But if you have morals, which is supposed to be taught in the public schools, then you have a standard. Then you can set the line, you know, according to those, ideally.
Well, I've heard report after report from parents that I've talked to that have said that their child is being bullied or whatever, for whatever reason, whether it's virtual or actual physical, and that they go to the schools and the schools basically do nothing. So you're either left with pulling your kid out of school or allowing them to, in many ways, go through torture. I also believe that's why there's a lot of absenteeism, is because of the bullying. The parents leave for work, the kids go, I'm not going into there. So how are you going to be able to get administration to change? Because it doesn't sound like they're going to be on your side.
Oh, yeah. We're not trying to change the current administration. We're trying to replace it. But the idea is 18% of the kids right now are suicidal in high schools in North Dakota.
Good grief.
It's the most sad generation. Because of things like bullying, the youth health risk survey results are horrible, bad behaviors all over the place, and it all comes from not teaching morals. Okay, so which superintendent, which union member, which others don't want morals to be taught? Okay, who's driving it? What's the source of it? The source of it is people that really don't like Christianity, that they're at a war with Christianity, and we have to admit that that's what it is. And so there's no neutrality. They can't be nothing. And so they are radical, humanistic, and postmodernists that are driving their philosophies all the way through. And that's, for some reason, they're committed to anti-realism and transgender and all of these amazing things. And so we just have to, so the superintendent can stop it right in its tracks, quite nicely, really, because of the authority given that position. So in the superintendents, they can set the strategic vision. So a strategic vision could include things like get rid of all the bad philosophies, humanism, et cetera, and then making policies, supervising the content standards, setting teaching and testing standards that match all the way through. And so then, you know, it might take some time for people to get used to that, but that would clean it up real quick.
You mentioned that with humanism, you have 15 problems. I would assume this is just one of them. Are there some others that you'd like to talk about today that rear their head that kind of seem really important to you that are just off the rails right now?
Well, yeah. There's just a lot of different things. So they're teaching that there's no difference between boys and girls and trees.
Oh, good Lord.
right? So that's kind of a problem. If you're gonna, it's supposed to be teaching truth. Just the taxpayer side of it is where, we're using property taxes, which is immoral property tax, because you'd lose your property if you didn't pay it. So therefore you don't own it like we used to in early America. So we're using that to pay for schools, and we're supposed to be teaching morals at schools. So that's another conundrum. The Every School, let's see, Every Student Succeeds Act is just a remake of the Common Core ideas. And I mentioned the Choice Ready, but the emphasis now in the strategic vision in the Department of Public Instruction is all the students to be choice ready. So it's like choice ready for, be ready for military, for instance. So the idea there is getting an emphasis onto technical things in some respects, but then neglecting a better education that we used to have. And then secondly, they're getting ready for a woke military. So this is the way I think of it. We're getting ready for remedial algebra in college. It's like, this is not really getting people ready. It's that choice ready idea is a smoke screen. That's a way to get people to think that everything sounds good. It's actually using the CRT emotional side of it to make you feel like you got something good. If all the kids are choice ready, doesn't that sound great? It's
Well,
not.
the whole thing that just frosts me is this: your brain's not fully developed till you're 26 now.
Okay.
And back to this We Are Teachers website, we just can't make kids' brains develop faster. It's like when people potty train their 6-month-old. You can maybe teach them to know what they're supposed to do, but parents train themselves, not the child. The kids have no responsibility in any of this anymore.
Notice right there that that's an example of the victim type of CRT. Okay, it's a new brand of CRT where everyone plays the victim. So we teachers can't really do it because the brains don't develop that fast, and therefore, we have an excuse not to get the job done. So, but that is literally kind of a new brand of the CRT. It's being the victim.
It sounds demoralizing if I was a kid, because I'm being told almost on a daily basis all the stuff I can't do versus telling me the things that I'm capable of trying. May not make it the first time, but I got to tell you, I always learn more from my failures than I did from my successes.
The teachers, and I'm thinking first of all that the parents have to do a lot of work when the kids get home from school. They've got to de-louse them or detox them from what they learned at school. And I've heard some great stories. It takes hours for parents to be able to explain to the kids what's right and what's wrong based on, what coming home and saying that, whatever, transgender and this and that that's going on in the schools. Another issue is the pornography and the bad books in the libraries, and then not being able to find Bibles in the library. It's like I was at a library somewhere not too long ago and just wanted a Bible for picture purposes, and they couldn't find one.
Wow.
And then I've asked around different districts, how many have Ten Commandments on the wall in the schools? And it's rare. I think I heard of one or two so far, but it's rare. And so even then, when they signed that a few years ago to allow that back in the schools, Ten Commandments, but it had to be treated as if it was any other historical document, not with authority like it has.
Well, there doesn't seem to be a lot of direction, because I know that there's been such controversy even over having the Pledge of Allegiance, because not everybody feels that way about the country. Well, you're here, aren't you? It just seems to me that the basis of the American education system at this point is destruction, tearing down, removal rather than replacement with something that now they're going to tell me, oh, we have ethics studies, because Minnesota just went mandatory ethnic studies, not ethics, ethnic studies for K through 12. What the heck does a 5-year-old need to have ethnicity studies for?
Right, it's brainwashing. It's indoctrination. There's some good books to help people understand what's going on in the times here. One of them from 1954 was by Gordon Clark, Christian Philosophy of Education. But he kind of, you got to have a standard to know what's happening, what's going on today. And that was the first book that hit me like a 2x4. It's like I never knew this, that that there is a better way to look at education, and that what's going on today is really indoctrination. There's a movie called Indoctrination, and so that's another one I often recommend. It's on Vimeo for $4 or so. Also, there's two good books, or three, by John Taylor Gatto. Another one called Dumbing Us Down, that's a shorter book, explains what's happened to the school system over the years. And it really is intentionally dumbing down the population. Why people would do that, they have their reasons, so that we get a pliable workforce fit for the corporations, that kind of thing. Then another one, he's got a longer book. It's got a lot of detail, but it's I think it's called The Underground History of American Public Education. So these are all easily to read and interesting. I think a lot of times, like me, people don't understand the situation we're in. It's been developing for a while. And it's really shocking, and maybe you don't want to hear it, about how things have changed over the years with the deliberate, you know, bringing in of these philosophies. And so think of John Dewey or Karl Marx or Nietzsche. These kind of guys have had a huge impact on our culture. And so because of them, we are in the society that they created because of the teaching colleges, teaching it to the teachers, you know. So another way to look at it would be from 1933, the Humanist Manifesto, the first one was written, John Dewey signed it and others. And that's a quick list of what humanists believe. So that's the foundation of the public school system today. So I think if you just look up Humanist Manifesto, you'll find it, and read what they believe. And that's what's being taught today in the school. So that would include things like atheism, naturalism, materialism, moral relativism, neo-Darwin evolution, personal autonomy, legal positivism, progressivism, economic interventionism, and social progress. So each one of those has, you know, books to write, read to understand them. But what I always found fascinating was that you can really trace the ideas that are driving the world today back to philosophers and actual people that think these things. And then if you have a standard to compare them with, like the Bible, then you'll see this is really bad. If you don't have a standard, then you're kind of missing and, you know, you're kind of wobbling. And then that brings up another point, is why don't we have a standard? Why
right.
Don't we know these? Didn't the churches teach these things? And no, they didn't. And the reason they didn't, back in the days of the Reformation or shortly after that, there's a movement, I've heard it called the Pietistic movement or Pietism movement, where they focused on evangelism and morals in the churches and stopped seeing scriptures as applied to the rest of life, like politics, etc.
Okay, I've got one last commercial that I need to get in for Redemption Shield, and I want everyone to know that they need to go to gfbestsource.com, and at the bottom of the homepage, you can click on the Shield to order today.
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. We've got about 10 minutes left, so I'm hoping we can get this in, but I want to talk to you about local financial control, because the spending, as far as being related to property taxes, is off the charts and our proficiency scores are down. And it kind of folds into this with teacher recruitment, because we're being told that we'd have more teachers and better teachers if we only paid them more. And I have nothing against paying teachers well, because I do believe they have a doggone important job and other things. But I also have to remember that I looked at a teacher one time who was talking about how they were paid so poorly, and I said, okay, why did you become a teacher? Well, I love the da-da-da-da. I said, do you realize that not once in that sentence did you mention pay? To me, teaching is a calling. Yes, is it good to pay people? Absolutely. But if you're going into teaching to get wealthy, you're doing it wrong.
Yes, lots to say there. First of all, on the idea that money helps improve education. That's been proven false many times. So if you look at the Cato Institute research on that, that would show you, or just ask any parent, you know, or ask you, you know, you've seen that more money goes in, the learning doesn't really go up.
No.
And then the teaching, the level of teaching and the gift of teaching is being really undermined by the overload and bullying of a system. And so if teachers get a little more freedom to teach what they want to do and not lose their license if they, you know, mention God, then they would be freer to do that. And also they could do things more like entrepreneurs with their teaching operations too. And so I would see that would be a great opportunity to do that. I teach entrepreneurship and there's a lot of opportunities for teachers to make more money by doing creative things. They just got to get a big administration off their back.
What about the local financial thing and property taxes? How are you going to fund them if the property tax initiative and stuff goes through? I know it doesn't mean more money, more better education, but it's for the children is already starting to rear its ugly head.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think we got to start listening to the parents instead of the administrators, because the parents know what they need at the school level. So go back to the lean accounting, so that the parents are saying what they need for the schools, not the administrators, because there's too many bad agendas going on with that level. And then you say, okay, well, gee, the North Dakota Constitution doesn't say anything about property taxes going to school. You know, isn't that supposed to be from school lands or legislative means? You can move money around from different funds. And so those kind of things can be done. So in the big picture, what I see is the budget being very nicely improved by starting with strategic objectives, so that you narrow down and teach what you should be teaching and not so much waste philosophies. And then from there, get the parents involved and say, okay, what do you really want learning at this school? Do you really want social emotional learning, et cetera, or not? Let's cut that out. And let's get down to what you really want at that local school. And so between those two ends of it, you've cut the budget down to what you really want, what the parents as the customers really want. And then you've cut out all of the waste, extreme waste that's coming in with the indoctrination. And then you got the legislature free to say, okay, yeah, these school lands really should be able to live on the school lands and maybe a little bit more from other funds. And then be reasonable, you know, people at the parents can do a lot better than what's going on right now.
I've seen a trend where they're equating the ability to educate a student with the grandiosity of the building. And we have been seeing in just about every district the demand for a new school, and the fact that they can't learn in these old buildings, which, by the way, they deferred maintenance on. So what can I say about that? But we're teaching materialism to these children at the worst level, that you can't possibly succeed unless you are sitting in a palace 8 hours a day.
Yeah. Well, Tom Sawyer comes to mind. You know, where a kid float down a river on a raft and probably learn everything you need to know. But yeah, it's a waste of money, waste of time. And so the schools and the system need money, right? They need money to survive. The students don't. The parents don't need that for the good education. And there's loss of opportunity. You know, the more, or I've often found, the less money that you have, the more creative you have to be. And
yes.
So that creativity drives really fun and interesting things. And so, you know, not that you necessarily have to cut any budgets. In fact, I don't look at it as cutting budgets. I look at it as, let's decide what we really want and then do that and then get rid of the waste. And that's how lean manufacturing works too. And so they can do the same thing. It's the bigger the school, the more the maintenance, you know, who's really driving that? Somebody is believing a lie about improving education with a better building. I've often seen that at NDSU too.
It's
new equipment and everything. It's like, it was great equipment and it was good for a class, but then it sits around for years and nobody uses it after that.
Well, it's basically it's an intelligent redistribution of wealth. They should be right on that line, because they both, everybody that's currently working in the system right now really seems to be channeling that thought pattern, redistribution of wealth. And The one thing that I will agree with you is in my 20 years at the college, I saw more blatant waste of money just because, and I will, this is a quote, we have to spend it or we'll lose it.
Yeah, I've seen that too. In lean manufacturing, everybody can study the Toyota production system, but it is also applied in schools. Iowa school system, Des Moines was one good example, although I think they did it more complicated. My favorite example of lean in finance there is FastCap.com. It's a manufacturing company, makes parts for things for Menards. But basically, there's some systems that can be used to really identify waste, you know, movement, people's time, materials, all of these things can be nicely identified as if it's really waste and not serving the exact purpose that the parents or the school wants it to serve, then it can be eliminated as a process, everyday continuous improvement. So those kind of things can be done more if they're not already being done in schools. But once you change the strategic objective, then other things become waste that aren't waste now.
So when you get elected, your first day you're going to walk into the office or wherever you're going to be working from, what do you consider to be your first move?
Oh, your first move is just to make public more so the strategic objective. Okay, so basically we're going to remove all the philosophies that align with secular humanism, postmodernism, and Marxism. Okay, so then we're going to say, okay, how are we going to figure out where those are and walk down through the organization to find them out? I would also say, okay, let's revive this North Dakota Constitution and say, let's make it more widely known that the North Dakota Constitution had a Christian context, that morality is supposed to be taught and other things. And then let's explain what those are and make sure, let's see who understands that, who doesn't. So then help people understand the history of the North Dakota Constitution and being able to apply it right through the system. And then begin the school meetings. So then the parents are there and we can start saying, okay, let's get this whiteboard up in front of the classroom and say, imagine you guys were in complete control of this school. What would you do? And then write that down with their own for that individual school, vision, mission, goals, and then the budget for the lean. And say, okay, now let's say, where are we going to meet? These bad philosophies are going to be out of here. Whoever's bringing them in, wherever they're coming from, they're going out fast. And so we get people in there so that know the difference, first of all, and then say, okay, let's lean it out. Is it in the curriculum? Is it in the teachers? Is it in the superintendent? Is it in school boards? Is it in the other organizations teaching these people? Or where is it? You're going to expose it. So then the parents can say, yes, we want socialism. Or no, we don't want socialism. Talk to our children. And then we can nail it quite nicely. So first day, we just kind of figure out who's supposed to be doing what on those topics.
Well, I know that you understand that there's going to be hellacious pushback, that you're going to have teachers' unions, you're going to have legislators, you're going to have school boards, and you're certainly going to have administrators that are going to be having cows all over the place.
Yeah, well, that would be evidence of their humanism.
So basically, do you think that you're going to be taken to court if you try to do this and that's going to stall everything for you, or you think you're just going to be able to do this?
In early America, Christians, all people, were taught to be lawyers themselves and not to fear the lawyers. And so if you fear the lawyers, that's what then you do things wrong. So I think you need to do things right and realize that the lawyers might be wrong if they're supporting the bad philosophies. And so if we're standing on the North Dakota Constitution, we're pretty solid ground.
Excellent. Well, we're just about out of time and your screen just froze, so this is perfect. That was Jim Bartlett as my guest today, and he is running for the Department of Superintendent of Public Instruction of North Dakota. Go out and check out his website, bartlettspi.org. You do a little investigating. People, we need some changes. Jim, thank you so much for being my guest today. You answered a lot of questions that we had not met each other, so I was throwing a lot of them at you, and you did wonderfully. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Everybody, it's another Common Sense Uncensored in the can for a Monday. Take care, everybody. God bless.